On this week's episode of the I501CU, the podcast for nonprofit board members, I have the distinct pleasure and honor of interviewing the Honorable Alex Sink. That name may be familiar to some of you listeners because she was actually the chief financial officer for the state of Florida at one time after a very successful banking career. And since that time, and even during that time, she has served on a number of nonprofit boards. So please, I hope you enjoy this interview with the Honorable Alex Sink.
Hey, I want to jump in real quick. Somebody asked me the other day, what does the Corley Company do? Well, we do three things for nonprofits. One, we facilitate meetings. Yes, like board retreats where we discuss governance and strategy with all the members of the board. Number two, advise CEOs and help them as they make decisions and implement actions to drive their mission. And then finally, we produce podcasts such as this one, but also for a number of nonprofits to help you get the word out, get your message out. So if you're interested in any of these services, please feel free to reach out to Michael at thecorleycompany.com. Now back to the podcast.
On this week's episode of the I501CU, the podcast for nonprofit board members, I am honored to interview the Honorable Alex Sink. Alex has been a mainstay in the state of Florida for a number of years, and she really exercises and demonstrates the power of serving. She's a true servant leader. I've had an opportunity to work with her in a number of capacities related to nonprofit board leadership. And so join me as I welcome Alex Sink. Alex, if you would, please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and all the things that you've done. Share with us.
Well, that would take years. Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you. And you have certainly been an amazing facilitator for so many nonprofits that I'm involved in. I'm glad to hear you're doing this because the nonprofit, life wouldn't be good without the many, many, many nonprofits in the world. But just a little bit about my life and how I got involved in this. I'm a farm girl. I grew up on a family farm in a little place called Mount Airy, North Carolina, which people will relate to because it's Mayberry. It really is Mayberry. It was the original home of Andy Griffith, and everybody knows about the Andy Griffith story. And just growing up as a family of four. Graduated Mount Airy High School, and then I went to school at Wake Forest and University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Majored in math. Was one of the few girls who were math nerds, and I can still consider myself a math nerd. And from there, I went to live in West Africa for 3 years and taught school at a Methodist Girls African High School and then at the American School in Liberia, and it was a tremendous experience. And so I came back to the state of North Carolina, and by that time I recognized that there were many opportunities opening up for women and professional women. And so I went to work at a little bank in Charlotte, North Carolina called North Carolina National Bank, NCNB, that eventually became Nations Bank, that is now the Bank of America, and had a 26-year career there. They transferred me to Florida. I lived in Miami, I then met my husband, Bill McBride, and moved to Tampa, and had a 26-year career with them. Then I took an early retirement and got into politics. And so I'll just stop there and take a breath, and I'm sure we'll talk more about my life in politics and in the nonprofit world.
Well, I'm curious. So when you went over to Africa to teach, there must have been something pulling at your heart, tugging at your heart to do it. So your nonprofit slant, if you will, must have started when you were young.
It did, I think, because of my parents. Both of my parents were leaders in our community. My dad was a college graduate farmer. He had a degree from ag economics at NC State, and my mother had a degree in music education. So Mount Airy was the town that my mother grew up in. She inherited the family farm from my grandfather and my great-grandfather, who I'll speak about in a minute. They were just deeply involved as Kiwanis Club. My mother was very active in agricultural organizations. She was actually appointed, first woman appointed to the Insurance Commission in North Carolina. And so they really set the example for contributing, giving back to the community, and making our town a better place to live in. So yes, it's always been in my DNA to be a contributor.
And we'll talk that up to one more reason people ought to serve on nonprofit boards, because your kids are watching you. So we're going to make note of that. I think that's really very interesting, Alex. So you're in banking for 26 years. When you were in banking, did you sit on a number of boards? Were you one of those community people is so prevalent in the banking world?
Well, totally. That's a good way to put it, Michael, because back then, I mean, it's still somewhat true today, but actually back in the years in the 70s and 80s and 90s and into the 2000s, if you were a banker in the community, you were automatically viewed as someone who was going to be a community leader because of all the customers we had, all the connections we had. You know, we couldn't thrive as a bank unless our communities were thriving. And so we had to, our first mission was to take care of our customers and to make loans and to advise our customers about how to invest their money wisely. And so if the economy was good, then banking was going to be good. And if we were helping nonprofits and being seen as contributors to the community, it built a lot of goodwill. And that brought business into the bank. So I like to say I built my whole career on helping small businesses figure out how to become more successful, helping larger businesses grow, but also ensuring that all the places I lived, Miami, Tampa, Jacksonville, Tallahassee, were communities that were being supported by. We supported arts, we supported United Way. I've been on the board off and on of United Way for 40 years, believe it or not, because we're all about lifting all boats and just serving the community.
And so what do you think, as you were, I'm focusing right now on your banking career, I guess, and I know you can't totally divide that, because I do want to get into what you did after bank, which I find is fascinating. And you're serving on boards. What do you think you learned from serving on the board that may have helped you throughout your career?
Oh, so many things. I think that knowing that I was going to come on your program, I started thinking back about, well, what were the first boards that I served on? And I can go back to a time when I was probably 26 or 27 years old, and I was involved in an organization in Charlotte, North Carolina at a young age that was working. Back then, we didn't have many women at all serving in elective office. Women were just beginning to dip their foot in to run for county commission or state house or whatever. And I was a part of a bipartisan organization, Republicans and Democrats. All we wanted was we wanted to get more women elected, and at a very young age, at the age of 30, I was elected chair of the board. And what I learned from being involved is the importance of managing volunteers. And managing volunteers is different because they don't have to be there. It's not like being in the bank where, you know, you got a bunch of people working for you and they have to flat do what you say. So I think one of my first lessons was learning how to convince and cajole people and figuring out what was motivating these volunteers so that we could achieve our common mission and our common goal. And while I'm thinking about it, because I don't want to lose this thought, when you're thinking about serving a nonprofit board, the very, very first and most important thing is that you have to be totally engaged in the mission of the organization. You have to be a believer. You have to believe in whatever the mission of that organization is and realize that you're going to devote yourself and make that organization's mission and that organization one of the top two or three priorities in your life.
I'm so glad you said that. So as you went through your career, were there times you said no to joining a board because it wasn't mission aligned? Or were you, did you just make sure that you were asked by the places that were that you supported the mission?
No, I said no many times. Sometimes for different, reasons. One of the best the best examples I have that's somewhat contemporary is that when I became the president of the bank here in Tampa, where I live now, I was approached by Junior Achievement, and the bank as an organization was always participating in their bowl-a-thons, and we were making contributions, and Junior Achievement was certainly aligned in terms of financial literacy with the mission of the bank. So it was a natural, and I was asked if I would serve on the board. And at the time, I had just taken over as the statewide president. And I had to tell the CEO, I had to tell Richard George, Richard, no, I cannot, I don't have the time to devote. Because that's the other thing. If you agree to be on a nonprofit board, you need to be sure that you're going to devote the time and make the commitment to serve. And I said, instead, this is what I'll do for you. What I'll do for you is pick an up-and-coming, fantastic, talented young person in my organization to serve on your board, and it'll be good for him, and it'll be good for you because I'm going to sit here and commit to financially support JA. Well, fast forward, Michael, that young person 25 years ago, Robert Mosbacher, will be in Washington, D.C. this June, receiving the National Service Award for Junior Achievement. I'm so proud of that.
That's, I tell you what, some you just don't.
Isn't that the best story?
It is. You never know the impact you're going to make, do you? Yeah. But I love how you said you recognized that you supported the mission. You just didn't have the time. This is one thing we preach on this podcast: is if you're going to join a board, you really have to go all in. You got to devote your time because they're expecting you to do that. But for you to say, you know what, but allow me to introduce you to somebody who can make a difference, and he certainly has. So that's got to make you feel great. That's
Let me
wonderful.
Say something about, I'm glad you brought that up about the aspect of devoting the time. Because to me, I have a process that I go through when I join a board that I'm not sure. It's not just about showing up at a quarterly board meeting. It's not just about maybe reading, setting aside an hour or two to read the materials ahead of a board meeting. When my practice is, when I agree to join the board, obviously I want to talk to the CEO, the executive of that nonprofit. I want to know the chair of the board. I want to understand what their expectations are, but I've always gone a step further, which I gather is not usual because I've gotten feedback about this. One of the first things I do is I want to take a tour of their operations. I want to tour their programs. I want to meet, I just recently joined the board of the Dolly Museum because I love art and I've never had the time to pursue it until now. And the first thing I did was I called the CEO and I said, I want to set aside a day to come over there and I'd like to have one-on-one meetings with every single one of your direct reports. So that they can tell me their perspective on their particular job, what their role is. And he, at the end of the day, he gathered them all together in the room and we just engaged in some back and forth and some conversation. And I asked them what their challenges were and how they thought I could be helpful as a board member. And I walked away from there and he said, nobody has ever asked to do that before.
Wow.
And those direct reports were just very appreciative and loved being able to say what they did and what their job is. So now when I'm in the board meeting, I have a much better feel for what some of the challenges are and maybe I've identified ways that I can help them be more successful, whether it's in the financial field or the fundraising aspect of it or making other connections in the community or helping them with government relations. That's just one of the things a little tidbit I would encourage anybody who goes on a nonprofit board is get your hands dirty. And if you have a CEO that's competent and that is, it knows that, you know, they're comfortable with their relationships, it shouldn't be threatening at all. And in fact, this is another idea that I've always practiced is before I go down into an organization and talk directly, really to, you know, somebody two levels down in the organization, I'll call the CEO and I say, look, I'd like to be able to talk to Susie or Dan or James. Do you want me to come through you to get it scheduled? Or is it appropriate for me to go just directly to them and ask them whatever I want to ask them? So they're just little nuances of things that you can do to make yourself a more effective and a non-threatening board member and to really learn about an organization.
Oh, you're very conscientious, and I know, and very insightful, because the fact that you reached out to ask for that day and willing to commit the time, which we've already talked about, but also to understand the organization, to use your experience now, because you bring a wealth of experience to the board and to be able to help support the CEO. And you've sat there and you've kind of broken down that wall, that mysteriousness. Oh, that's a board member with the staff. Because I tell CEOs all the time, the staff are scared to death of board members. Well, not scared, but you get my point, because that's the big, big boss. And there's just that anything we can do to mitigate that discomfort will certainly lead to a better result. So I commend you for that. Alex, so 26 years in the banking world, then you decide to run for political office, which is beyond me that you made that decision, but good for you doing it. And you actually won statewide, hence the reason I called you the Honorable Alex Sink at the beginning of this podcast. But let me tell you, so you go into the government sector. Are you able to serve on boards? And how did you view nonprofits being a government person?
Well, the answer is yes and no when it comes to serving on boards, for example. As the chief financial officer of the state, I wanted to be sure that I was behaving in an ethical way. And so I went back and reevaluated. At the time, I had been serving on the corporate board for Raymond James. Well, that was going to be a clear conflict because the state of Florida did business with Raymond James as a financial institution. So immediately, I resigned from that board. But then I was serving on the board and I was the chair of the board of the Nature Conservancy. And you're thinking, well, what does that have to do with the CFO office? Well, it has a lot to do because the state of Florida was at the time, and still is, purchasing lands for environmental purposes. Many of those lands were being managed by the Nature Conservancy, so there was a clear potential for conflict. So I was just very, very careful. On the other hand, I was a longtime board member at my university, Wake Forest University, which is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and you know, so there's not such a nexus between that and continuing to and being the CFO of the state of Florida, except that I was on the investment committee there. And the CFO is one of the three trustees of the state pension plan. So I conferred with the lawyers and the ethics people, and we determined that as long as I resigned from the investment committee, that I could continue my service at Wake Forest. Because there was no conflict with, you know, doing business with or being involved in the state of Florida. So those kinds of issues came up. And then as part of my role as the chief financial officer is under state government, I did serve out as the chair of the board of Florida Healthy Kids Corporation, which is our SCHIP program that provides medical insurance for kids. So that was in legislation, and it was determined that, yes, I was the chair of that board.
Well, you had to win a statewide election to become that. I don't know if it was worth it or not, but I know you served with valor, and then at least it kept your fingers in the game, right? In the
nonprofit game. Well, and even more than that, the joys of being in public service like that, Michael, is that at that point in time, Florida Healthy Kids was insuring, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids, but we knew that there were tens of thousands of other kids out there who were eligible. And so because of my background and my experience and other nonprofit boards, we were able to get in there. I reconstituted the board and we were able to get in there and put in some new technology. And as a result, probably 100,000 more kids got to have health insurance. So that's one of the joys, the benefits and the joys of being in a public office. You can just impact the lives of millions of people sometimes.
Well, I'm not surprised you didn't just view that as a figurehead position, that you actually got in there and did something as board chair.
Well, that's a good point. I'm going to say something about that, because my predecessor had just appointed somebody else to serve in that role. But I knew that there were so many issues and so many problems, and I felt like I was the one who could really help move it along and solve. And so I chose to serve myself as the chair of that board for a couple of years. And then when we got things more straightened out, and by that time I was in the middle of a governor's race, I appointed somebody else to serve as the board chair.
Oh, very interesting. How about that? Again, not surprised you made a difference. So I'm you mentioned you were on Raymond James' board. Okay, that's a for-profit entity. And I'm always curious, what is the difference between serving on a for-profit board and a nonprofit board?
A lot of legal stuff, for sure. When you're on a nonprofit board, there are lots of rules and regulations, and you are there representing the interest of the shareholders of that corporation. And the goals of the corporation are to be making profits. So there's still an audit committee, there's still maybe a marketing committee, but the legal jeopardy is pretty huge for a board member of a for-profit corporation. There's less pressure when you're a board member of a nonprofit organization, but that's one of the things I wanted to bring up, is so many nonprofits that get into trouble, when you delve back into what caused the trouble and why were their finances a mess, or why was their CEO not effective, it gets back to this attitude on the part of a nonprofit board. The board members don't pay attention. They don't pay enough attention. And it's easy for a nonprofit board member to show up at their quarterly board member, sit there, see their friends, you know, talk about everything else, go through a few ministerial, approve the minutes, here's the finance report, and really not ask the really, really, really hard questions. And so if there's one piece of advice I have to people who are serving in nonprofit boards, is don't sit there and think that you don't know something. Be willing to ask those stupid questions. I was a young board member of a nonprofit serving on a compensation committee, and this was earlier in my career, and I was kind of the new kid on the block and a young woman, and one of the directors wanted to sign a big, huge contract with an employee. And I just was sitting there thinking, Michael, oh, this is too long. This is too much money. What happens if the employee really doesn't perform and then we have to have a big buyout? That's not going to look good. But what do I know? Everybody else sitting around the table, the CEO wants to do this, the director wants to do this. None of the other board members who've been here a lot longer than I've been are saying a word about it. So I'm just going to be quiet. Well, you know what's coming? Years later, the whole thing blows up, and the new board is like, what in the hell were they thinking? And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I was thinking that too, but I was shy, and I didn't think I knew enough, and who was I to speak up? And obviously, I've never forgotten it.
Boy, that's a tough lesson, but I'm glad you're sharing that, because it's really important for any board members, especially new board members, because you're not biased or jaded yet. I encourage every new board member, ask those stupid questions. First of all, they're not stupid. You may think they are. I guarantee you there's others around the room wondering the same thing, even if they've been there a while. But sometimes your gut is pretty accurate, and just question it.
Groupthink is a really, really dangerous thing. And especially when you live in a community and there are people that you see in other environments or you socialize with, it's easy to fall into groupthink and not really pay attention.
Yeah, and I think that may be one of the most dangerous things with nonprofit boards. Maybe is that groupthink. Boy, I tell you what, it like you said, it's very prevalent. And it's dangerous, and it's unfortunate. Fortunately, most CEOs are pretty competent and are pretty honest and trustworthy, but sometimes they just make decisions that seem logical, like in this example, but with a little coaching, counseling through asking questions, maybe would have made a different decision. Very, very good. So you've served on a number of boards throughout your career. What if you were to talk to a prospective nonprofit board member, what challenges should they prepare for? What challenges did you have as a board member and can maybe continue to have as a board member?
Fundraising.
I hope everybody's watching this on video. You could see her face when she said that. Oh, come on, Alex. What do you mean by that?
Oh, my gosh. There are very few nonprofits that I've ever been involved with that don't have to be thinking about fundraising. And it starts with the CEO, it starts with the board chair, but it also has to involve every single board member. And let's say that, I mean, sometimes not, when you start, let's take United Way as an example. It's a community board. It's important for us to have diversity in every single respect. And we also need board members who bring perspectives of the communities that we serve. So not every board member is there just to write checks or be fundraisers. But everybody on the board has to be concerned about the financial well-being of the organization. And even if you're there not as a big check writer, that doesn't mean that you can't be in your other world, that you can't be out identifying people who can be big check writers or big contributors. So I think that's on every board that I serve on, probably at least 30% of the board meeting is spent on things, because if you don't have the resources, you're not going to be able to do the programming. So fundraising.
Yes, amen. Every board member's responsibility, which really ties in nicely to how you opened the conversation, that you have to have the time and the energy to commit to serving on a board. You can't serve on so many boards, right, that it dilutes yourself because you've got obligations to each one. I'd argue, if you're working, maybe one or two max, so that you can give that the time and attention to it and make those connections, because who are you going to connect to the fundraising apparatus at your organization if you're serving multiple organizations? So,
you know, and I want to say something about the connections. I've been at this a long time, Michael, and I have to say that some of my super, super, I mean, very best friends in this community I made because they were my fellow board members. I mean, I just can't exude this enough, is how I like hanging around with people on the United Way board, because they're all people who really care deeply about helping other people in our community improve their lives. And the benefits that come back to me, you know, as a board member, I want to contribute to the organization, but my dad used to have an expression. He says, Alex, you never really give anything away. It's always going to come back to you. And so why am I involved is because I love the act of giving, but you can just tell from the smile on my face how much joy that I have received from seeing the organization thrive and survive, but also from those just deep abiding friendships that I have made along the way.
Oh, I love that. And I couldn't agree more. That's a nice segue into this question. And you may touch on it again. So you've been an advocate for women in politics, and I suspect women in business as well. What advice would you give to any young women listening right now about serving on a nonprofit board?
Do it. just do it. It's important to have, it's important to have women's voices around the board table because we do bring a different perspective. We bring different life experiences. We relate to if that nonprofit serves women as a part of their mission, then we need women board members to relate to the clients that are being served by that nonprofit, whether it's an arts organization or a social service organization. It's important to have women's perspective. And it's also really important to have a critical mass of women on a board. You know, back in my day, it was like, okay, we've got one woman here, we're done. Then it became, oh, well, we've got two women. And oh, we have three now. Well, to me, I'm not satisfied until we're 50%. But, and you said young women? We need young people on our boards. In fact, I serve on the board of the Tampa Bay Wave, which is our startup technology incubator. And we were talking about new board members, and I held up my hand. And I said, "Look at us. We're all people who've made it. We're successful. We need to set aside a couple of board slots for young founders, because we're speculating here about what they need. Why don't we have a board seat for a couple of young people?" And we did the same. We did the same thing at Wake Forest. I advocated for, you know, we had a bunch of people 50 years old and older, and we're making decisions about educating young people. So we carved out a couple of seats for young alumni because they're closer to the real world and the real situation and can provide a broader perspective. So I think it's just, and it's a great experience to have. It's a good leadership experience. When I became a boss in banking, I was a more successful boss in banking because I had had that leadership experience in those nonprofits in Charlotte, North Carolina, that I was serving on the board. So that when I became the boss, I had a perspective of how to manage people and how to lead people. It's wonderful leadership experience.
Oh, amen. I totally agree with that. And it's immediate and you immediately have a seat at the table. So I'm glad you shared that because I think sometimes young people are a little bit, whether male or female, but I specifically asked you about females because I know your passion is I'm too busy. I don't have anything to offer. I've got nothing to say. I'm intimidated. And boy, nothing could be further from the truth, right? Let's get out there and let's serve. You don't have to serve on a bunch of them, but think of it even as career development, if for no other reason. To serve on a board. It's really important development. Yeah.
Well, and let me pop in too, because I have a son and a daughter. My son's 36 years old. My daughter's 35. They each had their second child. And so I've been able to see up close and personal what a challenge it is just to, you know, and their spouses have professional careers. I mean, it's just a challenge. You've got to the mother and the father, both with professional careers. You've got a couple of kids. I mean, it's easy to say, I don't have time for anything else. But so my advice there, pick one thing. Just pick one thing or one organization or one activity and get involved in that one thing because it helps bring balance to your life.
Oh, that's very good. That is very good. I want to now segue out. That I would end it on that, but I want to give you the last word, Alex. That was a great word. Anything else as you think about nonprofit board service, people who are listening, anything you'd like to share that would encourage someone to be on a board or even to be a better board member?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back. I think it goes back to passion. That passion. What do you really, really care about? Do you care about rescuing dogs or getting involved in early childhood, or do you care about supporting high school youth in becoming, you know, in graduating from high school, or even if it's something that you're selfishly interested in, like I'm a bicyclist and I'm going to be in the running club. It's such a great outlet for whatever your passion is. Go find a nonprofit that's involved and focused on what your passion is, so that you can jump right in and say, I want to help. I care about this. I want to help. I want to help this organization be more successful and impact the lives of more people.
Well stated. The Honorable Alex Sink, who won statewide election a number of years ago, who I know better as the United Way Suncoast board member, who's just really helping to change the world through that organization. Alex, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Wow, what an incredible interview with Alex Sink. She's really a special person, done so much to move the state of Florida forward throughout her career and her volunteer service. So now, recapping with Reed. Reed, hopefully you can size it down to three nuggets. So what are three nuggets from our interview with Alex?
When you're on the board, you need to be totally engaged in that mission. Alex said it needs to be probably one of the top two or three priorities in your life when you are on a board.
Yeah, to commit the time to it. Number two.
Alex is smart when it comes to maybe approaching staff. She first goes to the CEO and says, should I go through you for this? Or am I okay to reach out directly to the staff member with this request?
She respects that relationship and that dynamic and positions the CEO for success and does not try to undermine him or her by going directly to staff. And number three.
Just the overall awareness of your conflict of interests and eliminating those conflicts or minimizing them as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, we need to be conscientious of those as we join boards. Hers is obvious when she assumes state office, but there are other board members who don't really think sometimes things of a conflict of interest. But that is so critically important because you don't want to harm the trust the organization is building in the community. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Recapping with Reed, he was able to identify, limit it to three, and we could have gone on more and more from our interview with Alex. So I want to thank everybody for listening, and then I will 501 see you next week.